Now, today marks the close of nominations for anyone seeking to run for elections to a city or county council when polling takes place on June 7th. 5 years ago, almost 2,000 people ran across the country's 31 local authorities. The figure as nominations close today show even more candidates in the field, a total of 2,906. But will we see more women running or elected, or is the changed political landscape with increasing concern for the safety of politicians at all levels putting would-be candidates off? Well, I'm joined on the line now by Michelle Maher, who's programme manager for See Her Elected, a scheme run through Longford's Women's Link to encourage women to seek election to local government. Michelle, welcome.
Good afternoon, Colin.
Now, we're going to issue the warning to you and to everybody at the top not to mention any candidate's name, because if you do, we'll be here for the rest of the programme reading out names one by one. So we'll avoid that. But nominations have closed. So where are we at? How many women will be contesting these elections of the 2,906?
Yeah, my tally as of this morning, and I suppose the caveat is that not all the returning officers have been publishing their lists on a daily basis. So it'll probably be into next week before we have a correct picture of the overall number of candidates, the parties and the number of women. But as of this morning, I'm calculating at about 655 women who are running. That's hovering around a third of all candidates. You mentioned a figure there of 2,900. I think it's more like 2,100. But 2100, again, okay. So that's around a third of all the candidates who are women. But even in absolute terms, 655 is the highest number of women who have ever run in the local elections.
Okay, and back in 2019, there were 561 female candidates, which is about 22%. So it's up. It's up. It's gone from a fifth to a third of the candidates are women.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So, and we're very proud and See Her Elected to say that about 40% of them have availed of support and training from programs like ourselves and others.
All right. Any black spots in the country? Any areas where there are no women contesting elections?
Again, by my calculation, and again, with the caveat that all the details aren't available online, I think, and I'd love to be proved wrong by the end of the programme, I think that there's three local electoral areas, just three in the whole country, where there won't be a woman on the ballot paper. And they are Connemara South, Moat in County Westmeath, and the area that's around the Dingle Peninsula in Kerry. But as I say, I'd like to be wrong and to think that everybody who is heading in to vote at the local elections would have the option, if they chose to do so, to vote for a woman.
Okay, so just three local electoral areas. But last time, some councils had very few women elected. Where were they?
Yeah, I mean, overall, about a quarter of the county councillors last time round were women. But those figures were really heavily skewed by the large number of women in councils in and around Dublin. So the likes of Dublin City or Dunleary Raftown were almost 50-50 or there or thereabouts, male-female. And even the counties around that, you know, Louth, Wicklow, Meath, Kildare, they were a third and up women county councillors. But a really different story out in rural Ireland. You know, Carlow, there's just two women elected. Waterford, only two women elected. Mayo, a big county like Mayo with 30 county councillors, was only two women there. There's only a single woman elected in Longford. In Donegal, one of the bigger councils in the country with 37 county councillors, there's currently only three women there. So very much in rural Ireland, a big, big problem with the underrepresentation of women or overrepresentation of men, whichever way you want to look at it.
Okay, now, the issue of personal security, it's been, you know, in the headlines recently. Mm-hmm. People who are either sticking up posters for or running in local elections around the country, again, we're not going to mention any names or areas on this. The perception at least has been there that this would be or might be a turn-off factor for people. What's your mm-hmm. experience?
Yeah, well, there are clearly people who think women have no place in politics and women of colour even less so. And they engage in threatened behaviour, as you've described, anonymous trolling. It's aimed at all politicians, but when it's aimed at women, it often carries a sinister sexual undertone. But I have to say, instead of running for the hills, it looks like Manana Heron are on the march to a ballot paper near all of us, as I said, in record numbers. So, you know, for the, there's going to be a choice. So especially in rural areas, I would say if a woman candidate largely shares your values and you're not compromising your principles to any extent, then consider voting for a woman instead of defaulting to the usual all-male lineup.
Can I ask you, the if I suppose personal security isn't the main deterrent, but it's still only a third of candidates are women, what are the deterrent factors?
Well, the considerations, I suppose, that women will go through, first of all, you know, they're kind of, if they're thinking about doing this, the first thing they kind of stumble across is, I suppose, a lack of knowledge about what the council does and what a councillor's job description might look like day to day. So there was a job of work for See Her Elected and others to do in demystifying local government. And then there was, well, where do you start? You know, if you're not from a political family, you know, if you're not steeped in a political party, where do you start? So, you know, we tackled that by publishing Ireland's first guidebook on how you run for election, and we ran workshops with that. And it was kind of only when they, you know, when they understood the job, felt comfortable with it, knew that they had a plan, you know, a step-by-step, very practical plan and workshops to go with it on, then they start to think about, you know, the safety and the social media. And it's often their families rather than the candidates themselves.
Yeah, well, I was going to ask you about that. If it's not their personal safety they're considering, and but it is that of their families, to what degree is the issue of the home address an issue for candidates contesting elections?
Yeah, I think there's a rural consideration that's sometimes overlooked when people talk about addresses going, when you're putting in your papers to become, formally become a candidate, there's a requirement for you to include your address there. But in rural Ireland, first of all, in smaller communities, everyone will know where the candidate lives anyhow, so it's something of a moot point. But I think more importantly, where your address is a townland, which it is for many of us, it's actually a really important piece of information for voters.
Right, it's a selling point to your local base.
It places you, yeah. But voters know who you are and who your people are. So, you know, they think, ah, that's who she is. She's one of those Mars from that place. So for that reason, I think it should be voluntary. Candidates should be allowed to provide as much or as little of their address as they want.
Okay, Michelle Maher from the organisation See Her Elected. Many thanks. Thanks for joining us and giving your insights there. Ivana Bacic, I know you're a member of the Women's Caucus in the Oireachtas. I suppose it's welcome news for you in the first instance that the proportion of women running for election this time, I mean, the overall number of candidates is up, and the overall proportion of women of those is also up.
Yes, I do very much welcome that, Colm. I think it's really good to hear that women are running for election in increasing numbers. It's something that I've worked on for a long, long time. Back in 2009, I authored a report for the Justice Committee on how to increase women's participation in politics, and that report led to the passage of the Gender Quota Law for the Dáil. We identified five C's that hold back women's progression into and in politics: lack of cash, lack of confidence, an old boys' culture, lack of childcare, and candidate selection procedures. And it's been good to see measures adopted like the quota, which try to tackle those, because we have a serious overrepresentation, as Michelle has said, of men in politics. 77% of TDs are still men. So it's really important, and similar figures then at local level. So it is really important that we see more women running. And, you know, organisations like See Her Elected and Women for Election give huge support and mentoring to women candidates. Obviously, as a party leader, I've been very concerned to ensure that we will have really significant numbers of women running. And right. I'm proud that we have 41%. But I would say this, it's unfortunate to see Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael. And obviously, we'll wait to see the final figures once now nominations have closed. But certainly this week, there are reports that under 30% of their candidates would be women. And, you know, we need to ensure women are supported in coming forward, because
as you say,
those five C's hold us back.
Yeah. Okay. Just on the personal safety issue, and you're, you know, out on the campaign trail, has it come up?
Yes, it comes up extensively. I was
as
a member.
It comes up as an issue amongst the candidates, or you've witnessed or heard from candidates or their teams who have been subjected to abuse.
Yes, I have, in both senses. So certainly our candidates in some cases have been subjected to horrendous abuse, both online and in person. And it's not unique to any one party. It's deeply anti-democratic to see, again, a very small number of people acting this way. It will not make me change my behaviour. And if anything, in fact, as Michelle bore out there, it has made women, I think, more resolute about running, because we can't let bullies and people who are seeking to undermine our democracy win. And so, you know, I think it's all the more important that we all that women, that those of ethnic minorities, LGBT candidates, all of us would have the courage to go forward to put ourselves up for election, because it's a profoundly courageous thing to do. I just want to commend people who are running, because it, you know, it is courageous to do it. It's really important people do it for the sake of our democracy. We can make things, improve things.
I just want to go to the home address point, though,
Colm, is important. We put forward an amendment on that because I think there is a way around it, that you know, we would require people simply to put, for example, their townland rather than a street or a number on a street.
And that, Sean Kenny, would you agree with that?
Well, I coming from a rural constituency, I don't, and talking to candidates, both local and European, who've been out on the trail, there's very little abuse on the door. Even one candidate told me this morning, he said in one or two cases, people have mildly said, no, we're not interested. And that's great. I do believe with the whole thing in relation to gender balance, I think that is very good to see the numbers up. But there's one other point I think that needs to be raised. And as a member of the Disability Matters Committee, I think we should have a disability quota for people to go for both local and for national and European elections, because we have so many people in this country with a declared disability. And I'd like to know when, I'd like to see when the process is closed here with the nominations, how many people actually have a declared disability who are going for election.
Sorry to interrupt you on this, but would you have a percentage in mind, because of the gender quota is the aspiration would be 50-50, but for people who are proponents of it, what would your proposal be for the disability quota?
I would like to see, based on the number of people with declared disability in the country, that pro rata would be allowed as a quota. And I'll give you one example. We have a great councillor here in Galway.
Careful now.
He's an existing councillor, let's say. He's an amputee. And from his point of view, being a councillor for the last 10 years has been a hindrance, because he's been means tested, and because he needs a prosthetic limb, he actually has to fund that himself. So he's been disadvantaged being a politician. He's a guy who has come on to the Disability Matters Committee to present to us the lived experience of living with a disability as a politician. And my understanding would be that we will have less of that type of a person in politics when we need more people like that, so that they can give the lived experience. And
so not just the quota, actually look at some of the barriers as well. I may come back to you if we have the time on this, Sean Kenny, but I wanted to ask Oisín Smith, the requirement on parties is to have a 40% number of candidates going into the general election or suffer some penalty if they don't meet that. Would it be a good idea to have it at the local election as well, and why isn't it there at local level?
I'm glad to see that the number of women running has increased. It's obviously improved, and I think one of the reasons it's improved is it's not because of quotas or orders, it's because the conditions or the feasibility of being a woman in politics has improved. Now you can get maternity leave if you're a county councillor. Your childcare costs will be half what they were. There are and longer maternity benefit and so on. So there are improvements which make it more viable, more feasible. Even the fact that you can now do many of your county council meetings online if you have to, so you don't have to leave your workplace or your home. So I think that it clearly is working. It clearly is increasing the number of women who are running. And at local government, like we had 50-50 in Dunleary. My own party is putting up 50% of our candidates are women. But in the Dáil, it's much smaller than that, much lower than that, as Ivana will know. And we do have a problem, because it's not because of political correctness. It's because you're making a decision and you don't have the perspectives from the people who are going to have to live with those laws. And you don't have good decision making if you don't have the people who've got the lived experience to make the decisions. Sean Kenny's right. You need people who have disabilities. You need people who reflect the Irish population. Need people of all ages. And another thing we really don't have is any kind of mix of ethnicities in the Dáil. Absolutely everybody is white in the Dáil, apart from Leo Varadkar being half Indian, and there's nothing else, no other diversity.
Apart from people of traveller ethnicity, which would include Pádraig McLaughlin and Eileen Flynn. Can I ask you, just on the personal safety issue, would family safety be more of an issue for you or more of a concern of yours than your own personal safety?
I think that intimidating families is the worst thing you can do. I think a lot of a lot of politicians are okay with getting abuse or getting attacked or whatever, but they're not okay with it happening to their family. Your family often does not agree with you, and the idea that you would intimidate a person by attacking their spouse or their children is horrific. And I would like to see the law changed on this, not for politicians but for everybody. How should you be allowed to intimidate a family, to go to somebody's family home and intimidate them is absolutely wrong. So, and again, it's a very, very small number of people who are doing it. It's the same people again and again. It's not a general thing. Like when I'm knocking on doors, I am not seeing abuse and violence. What you're seeing is that a very, very small number of people are carrying out these incidents, but it is now straying into attacks, and it's crossing the line. When you hear somebody shouting abuse out of a car, you think, that person might get out of the car now and attack somebody. And it's not aimed at me as a government person. It's the opposition and its independents as well.
Okay. What's your own personal experience of that, Ivana Bacic?
Well, just yesterday, standing on Talbot Street, indeed, at the Dublin Monaghan Memorial event, I was discussing with a local person about dangers in politics, and somebody came by and started filming me and shouting abuse in my face. So but as Oisin said, you know, this is something, unfortunately, we have become used to. It is only a tiny minority. The vast majority of people are very, very civil, very courteous, very warm when we knock doors. And I love canvassing, you know. So that is still a very warm experience. And I want to emphasise that, because particularly when we have so many new candidates,
All right, now, careful.
And I won't name
any.
We're
going to take a break.
But more of our new candidates are women than men. And you know, we have to emphasise the warmth.
But
the attacks on families are the worst aspect, and the protests at people's homes. That should be utterly unacceptable.
OK, we're going to take a break because we want to come back and have a look at the issue of wind farms in advance of a protest next week at Dáil Éireann about wind turbines.
Saturday with Conor Mo Mungon on RTÉ Radio 1.